And we're holding at the beginning of the Seder Zroim section in Ein Yaakov. So having finished Masechta Brachos, now the rest of Seder Zroim has no Bavli, only Yerushalmi. So the Mechaber of Ein Yaakov took the Yerushalmi and took things out of it as well, which we're going to have after that. But first he went through the Mishnayos of Zroim and extracted things from there that, like the rest of Ein Yaakov, were things that are meant to teach us Midas Tovos and love of Hashem and love of Torah and all the various other things that he mentions in his Akdama, that each item in Ein Yaakov is supposed to be for one of 12 for one of 12 things that a Yid should keep uppermost in his mind. So he starts out for the first Mishnah, Masech Tepeya, then. So the first half of it he didn't quote. We have it in Davening, Eved Vodim Shein Lam Shiver. The first one it mentions is Peya. And the point is, because Peya, there's no minimum amount. In Torah, you could give any amount. That's what this Mishnah is doing over here. Then after that, the Mishnah continues. And this is the part that's quoted over here. Eved Vodim Sha'odim Eichel Peresein Ba'olam Azeh. The following mitzvahs, a person eats the fruit of it in Olam Azeh. Ba'keren Kayimus Lo'la Olam Abah. And the principle, the full reward is left over for Olam Haba. So in other words, the same way as you have, for example, a field, you have peiros of it on an ongoing basis, but then you still have the keren, you have the principle, the actual field itself. The same way here, these mitzvahs have dividends that are paid off in Olam Hazeh, and then you still have the principal reward is kept for Olam Haba. Kibud Avraim, the first one is Kibud Avraim, and the Rosh over here brings from a Gemara in Kiddushin that learns them all out from Pesukim. By Kibud Avraim, since it says in this week's parasha, Laman, or actually it doesn't, well, yeah, in this week's parasha, yeah, so it's a Dibris, the Kabbalah of Yichav Esamecha, Laman Yadrichon Yamecha, in verse Chanan, you also have Laman Yitav Loch. So therefore, so we see that there's a dividend of it paid off in this world that a person lives long. Then the Gemara goes on and says, but you have also wise and Shaluach HaKan in that list. And ultimately, the Gemara ends up saying that the ones that are in this list are ones that are Ben Adam L'Chaver. So they have dividends in this world because you have not just the aspect that's Ben Adam L'Makam, you also have an aspect that's Ben Adam L'Chaver, which you don't have with Shaluach HaKan. So therefore, Kibud Avraim is on this list. Ugmilas Chasadim, same thing. It's also the page Aleph of the Zeroim section. It's labeled at the top, Masech Tepeya. The opposite page 218. So Kibud Avraim, Ugmilas Chasadim, doing a kindness for another Yid. Bringing peace between one Yid and another. So again, the Gemara points out, for each of these, you have psukim that express the idea that there's a reward in this world. By Gemilas Chasadim, you have a Loshen, a Pasuk in Mishle that goes, Roidif Tzedakah B'Chesed, a person who chases after Tzedakah and Chesed, Yim Tzachayim Tzedakah B'Chavod, he will find life and Tzedakah and honor. So therefore, we see that there's dividends of it, there's payers of it in this world as well. Then the Gemara mentions that since the pasuk says "Bakish Shalom Rod Fehu," that you should pursue peace. So therefore, we learn the same word "roidif" as you find by Tzedakah B'Chesed. The same thing applies to that. Just like by Tzedakah B'Chesed, Gemilas Chasadim, we're saying that there was payers in this world. So it is also by Havas Shalom Rod Machaveri. But Talmud Torah, Keneged Kulam, and Talmud Torah is equal in importance to all of them. The Rosh brings over here from Yerushalmi that two amiroyim in the Yerushalmi, one of them says that the whole world isn't even equivalent in value to one word of Torah, and the other one says even all the mitzvahs of the Torah are not equal in value to one word of Torah. That's what it means. For Talmud Torah connected kulam, that it counts as equal to everything else.
Through Talmud Torah, you can
mekayim everything, right? So the Gemara actually discusses there at the end of the first parak of Kiddushin, which is greater, Talmud Gadol, like Maisa Gadol, and you have the line over there that Talmud Gadol Shemevi Lide Maisa, right? So there's different places, Tanya and other places, talks about that there's an aspect of Talmud Torah which is, as we're saying over there, only the purpose of it is in order to be able to do Maisim Tovim, and then there's an aspect of Talmud Torah which is higher even than Maisim Tovim, and that's what we're saying over here with Talmud Torah connected to one. So that's what we're saying. There's a certain schar, there's payros of it in Olam Hazeh. The Rambam over here points out in his Pirush that not only is there the point that because these are mitzvahs ben adam l'chaveira, therefore they deserve peiros in this world, but there's also the fact when you do those mitzvahs, it also brings about that other people will also do the same kind of thing. They'll learn from you. So therefore, for that reason alone, you should have peiros, because you're having a good influence on a fellow yid and causing that he should do mitzvahs as well. So you have your mitzvahs are causing peiros, that there are other Jews who are doing the same thing, therefore you deserve a schar of peiros as well. Now, in morning davening, when we say this paragraph, Eilu Dvarim Shein Lahem Shir, we add a whole bunch of other things. Not just here, we just have three things. Kibud Avraham Gmilus Chasadim, Vavas Shalom Enanam Machaveh. In the Siddur, we have a bunch of other things. Vashkama Space Bin Shachas Ravis, Vatmasa Sochem, Rabbi Kocholim, etc. So the Gemara actually brings that as a statement of Rabbi Yochanan over there, which Tosfos and Kedushin points out that at least part of it seems to be a braisa, and then there's Rabbi Yochanan adding on top of that braisa. So the idea is we're in morning davening, after having said Birkas HaTorah, there's a Tosfos in Brachos that explains, after we've said Birkas HaTorah, we should right away be learning something. We don't strictly speaking have to. Strictly speaking, you said the Brachos on Torah, it's fine, you're going to learn later in the day, but still the minute developed that you should learn something of Torah right away. So therefore we have from Torah Shebichsav, we have Birkas Koyanim, and from the different parts of Torah Shebaal Peh, not just the Mishnah, but also we blend in together with it a piece of a braisa and a piece of Gemara, and that way we have all the major parts of Torah Shebaal Peh. So the Gemara explains over there that the Talmud Torah connected Kulon is because again through Talmud Torah, a person is able to be zoicha to all these things. The Rambam, in fact, at the end of his Pirush, brings this thing that we just said. Talmud may be the day Maisa. So therefore, that's one reason why it's connected Kulon. Anyway, the Gemara there explains that all of those other things. Now, the Gemara itself doesn't have the full list that we have in the Siddur either. So those come from different other Nuschois of that Gemara and whatever. But anyway, the Gemara ends up explaining that all of those other things that are listed over there are all outgrowths of these things over here. Namely, so let's go through the list. Kibur Devraim we have over here. Gmilas Chasadim we have over here. Hashkomas Beis Midr Shachas V'Avis is part of Talmud Torah. Bachnosas Urchim is part of Gemilas Chasadim, or Biko Cholim is also, Vachnosis Kala as well, Vahavoyas Ames is also, Iyun Tefillah. Now, Iyun Tefillah is an interesting one. Rashi over there mentions that concentrating, having Kavana in davening, is also part of Gemilas Chasadim. And Rashi brings in that connection a pasuk, Goymel Nafsha Ish Chesed, a person who does kindness to his own, a person who does a favor to his own neshama, is a person of Chesed. So in other words, he's helping out his own neshama by davening. There's also the point that the word nefesh also means desire. So when a person is Goymel, when he gives good to his desire that he's asking Hashem for things, and he davens Ish Chesed, then that means that he's a person of Chesed. So therefore, that's also included in Gemilas Chasadim. There's a mind.
That's selfish then.
Right, right. So that's not selfish. It's a form of chesed to himself. It's a form of chesed to himself, but not a selfish kind of chesed, but a good kind. There's actually a maimer of the Rebbe based in turn on a maimer of the Rebbe Maharash that explains on a deeper level. Also, the vort is that usually we talk about tefillah is connected the korbanos, and the korbanos when we think about it are taking something from the Gashmiistic world and elevating it to Hashem. But then you have the Korbanos Tamid, which even though, I mean, they are in that sense the same kind of thing, you're taking an animal and offering it, but there's the idea that the Korban Tamid is more, which the Tefillos are connected, the Tamidim, are more in the nature of bringing down Hashpa from above. So therefore, in that sense, it's like Gemilas Chasadim, you're causing that Hashem should bestow goodness on the world, and therefore, through your davening, you're doing the Isurusa de la Sata, which results in the Isurusa de la Eila, and in that sense, it's part of Gemilas Chasadim. So that means both. I mean, the nafsha means his soul. So it means his neshama, which benefits from his learning, from his davening. But it also means, the word nefesh also means a desire. So, for example, yeah. So that Gemara is in Masechta Shabbos. So we'll get to it in a few months' time. Bez Hashem, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that more over there. But yeah, there is this point that Iyun Tefillah is part of, Rashi mentions over there, is part of Gemilas Chasadim. And yeah, one explanation behind that is that the word nefesh means when a person wants something. Yeah, like in Mieshes Nafshe. So anyway, then the Irin Tefillah, Avos Shalom Shonran Machaveiro, mentioning over here, Talmud Torah connected to Olam. So we have the fullness. The Pashtus, because we just had before in the Gemara, we had yesterday that a person should be going from Beis HaMedrash to Beis HaKnesses and back and forth. So maybe therefore right after Ashkamas Beis HaMedrash, Shachas V'Avis, well, not right after, okay, in between we have various other things of Milas Hasadim. So I don't know what the reason is. Diane Raskin mentions in the notes to his Siddur that there's other reasons for, there's other points about the particular order. There's Al-Pi Kabbalah, there's a particular order to these things, which is why. People that put a bit of time, so when it's okay.
So they dive in Shachis and then they go to it, then the right after that. You
know, okay. All right. Okay. So there is an idea that you should. There is an idea in particular that you should learn Chassidus before davening, because that puts you in a frame of mind to have Ava and Yira for the Eibishter before you daven. Right. Hashkamas Beis HaMedrash. Right, because you're also getting up early and you're learning in a way that you're supposed to learn. After all, you're supposed to learn. The Gemara mentions you're supposed to learn Halacha Pesuka before you daven. Okay. A later Mishnah in Masech Depeya. So further on, the Mishnah talks about the dinim of the various matnas aniyim, one of them being lekech, that if while you're harvesting the grain, you drop one or two stalks, then you have to leave it for the poor people. So the Mishnah says, Mishnah aniyach as aniyim lok, right? If a person doesn't let the poor people gather the lekech, or he allows one poor person to, but a different one not. Unlike Truma and Meiser, where you get to choose which Kohen or which Levi should get your Truma and Meiser, Matnas Aniyim are like that or not like that. Any Oni that comes, you have to allow him to take. Or the Mishnah continues, or he helps out one of them, so then that's at the expense of another one. In all those cases, there is a Gozol Aniyim. And in effect, he's stealing from the poor people. So not literally stealing in the sense, I mean, after all, it doesn't actually, Yun Yaakov points out, no oni has yet taken a hold of it, but it's gezel medivrei. Al zeh nemar, on this, there's a pasuk in Mishlei that says, al tase gvul olam, don't overstep the boundary of the world. Now the Mishnah is darshan, and you have it printed over here in the Mishnah as olim rather than olam as it is in the pasuk. So the Mishnah is darshaning the word oilom as though it said oilim, and then the Yerushalmi explains on that. There's only Yerushalmi on most of Zeroyim. There's no Bavli. The Yerushalmi explains two possibilities. One is that the word oilim refers to oilim Mitzrayim, the Jews who came out of Mitzrayim, whom Hashem gave these mitzvahs. Shlomo is warning you in this pasuk: don't overstep the boundary that was established when Hashem gave these mitzvahs to the Jewish people who came out of Mitzrayim. Hashem told them, among others, the mitzvah of leket, so don't overstep that and start taking away the matnas aniyim from the poor people. The other possibility, the Yerushalmi says, is the word olim can mean the poor people themselves. They were actually going downward financially, but Beloshin Sagi Nahar, in a euphemistic way, we call them olim, the ones who are going up, the same way as we call a blind person Sagi Nahar, which means a lot of light. So according to that, it would mean that, don't overstep the boundary of the poor people. They have the right to this matnas aniyim. Don't take it away from them. So he continues, Domel din zeh shenunim perek zayin mishnah gimel. You have a similar din later on in perek zayin of the same masech, the vizehu, and it goes as follows. Hamaniach kokola tachas ha-gefen. Now you have, the Torah tells us that similar to the way you have leket with grain, in a similar way you have a matnas aniyim with grapes called peret. Same idea, when you're harvesting the grapes, if one or two grapes fall to the ground, then you have to leave them for the poor people. So hamaniach kokola tachas ha-gefen, if a person puts a basket under the grapevine, the shashu boats, so while he's harvesting the grapes, so this way everything will fall into the basket. How does it goes al saniyim? Then also it's considered that he's stealing from the poor people. Al zen nemer, al tasik vul olam, and again we daush vul olim, don't overstep the boundaries of the world, meaning again of the olim, either of the olim itzrayim or of the poor people. So the same din that applies to leket applies to grapes. Mefoshim, in fact, point out that what it means is if you actually literally put a basket over there and all the peret is falling into it, for sure, of course, that's called stealing. The Mishnah doesn't even need to say that. What we mean is, even you're putting a basket over there, that when you're harvesting the clusters of grapes, they should fall in. You should be careful to position it in such a way that peretz won't at the same time fall in. Because if it does, then you're taking that away from the anim. So the answer would be, in other words, that you have to, if you're going to put a basket over there, if you're like this, you're harvesting grapes, you're cutting off clusters of grapes and throwing them onto the ground. And then later on, you're going to gather them up from the ground. If you want to put a basket over there, be careful that you position it such that only the whole clusters will fall in there and the peretz will not. The peretz will fall on the ground and you'll leave it for the poor people the way it's supposed to be. There is a point over here, the Tosfos Yom Tov says, and the Etz Yosef brings it over here, that there are actually two different psukim in Mishlei that use this expression, al tasig gvul olam. One of them ends, asher osu avesecha, don't overstep the boundaries of the world that your ancestors have made, those boundaries. So then that would fit with the opinion in the Yerushalmi that we're talking about the Olam Mitzrayim, who are our ancestors. They left Mitzrayim and they were given these mitzvahs. Be careful that you don't violate those mitzvahs. Then you have a second pasuk that also begins, al tasig vol olam, and continues, over sdei yisoimim al tovoi, don't go into the field of yisoimim who don't have anybody to stick up for them. So that one fits better with the opinion in the Yerushalmi that we're talking about the olam over here means the poor people themselves. So both opinions actually have a pasuk to back them up. Okay. Towards the end of the Masechta, it starts talking about the dinim of Maiser Oni and other tzedakah that you give to poor people. So the Mishnah says, Mish yesh le masayim zuz, a person who has 200 zuz to his name, lo yita leka chikko peyo Maiser Oni, he is not allowed to take any of these matnas aniyim, because those are meant for the poor people. If he has 200 zuz, one idea is 200 zuz would be enough to live on for a year, so then we can't consider him poor. Marsha mentions over here a remez that's brought on this in Uri Yusfarim. The word tzedakah is gematria 199. So therefore, there's a remez to that. As long as you have 199, you can take tzedakah. But once you have 200, then no. If you make beyond a certain amount, yeah. Continues the Mishnah. Hoyulai reish chosu dinner. If the person has 199, so he's missing that one dinner, afilo elaf noisin like achas, then even if they give him 1,000 dinner at once, harezi yito, then he's allowed to take it. In other words, the point is, it won't be that he can only take enough to bring him up to 200. As long as he's below that cutoff point, then you can give him as much as you want. The Yerushalmi in this connection actually tells a story involving some Talmidim of Rebbe. They had a Talmud, one of the Chaverim, one of Rebbe's Talmudim, had below 200 zuz, and Rebbe used to give him his Maiser Oni all the time. Rebbe being very rich, the Maiser Oni amounted to a large amount. So some of Rebbe's other Talmudim got jealous of this guy. So one day some of them came over to him and offered him one dinner. You know, listen, we see you're poor, you know, you could use some tzedakah here. Then he counts up his money and finds that now he's at 200. So then later on that day, he's very upset. And Rebbe asks him, that's the day when Rebbe is supposed to be giving him his Maiser Oni. So he asks, what's the matter? He tells him the whole story. Rebbe realizes what happened. He tells some of his other Talmidim, take this guy out to a store and make sure he spends some money. And then, so he did. And then when he comes back, then Rebbe tells him, okay, pull out your wallet, count your money, and sure enough, he's below 200, and Rebbe gives him his Maiser Oni as usual, and the Yerushalmi also says over there that Rebbe criticized, but so those guys have tricked him, but yeah, Rebbe also criticized those other Talmidim that, you know, they know the halacha, but they're using it in the wrong way against a fellow Yid. But yeah, it continues the Mishnah. What happens if he has 200, but some of it is under a mashkan to a creditor of his. So he owes money. And he has objects that he owns that are under a mashkan to a balchoyv, or the ksubas ishtoy, or they're under a mashkan for his wife's ksuba. Harezi yito. And he's still allowed to take matnas anim. The Rambam does mention the halacha, though, based on other gemaras, that it depends, that he'd be allowed to still take leket, shikha, and peya, and maisa oni. But if we're talking about tzedakah, that the gaboy tzedakah collect in town and give out to the anim, then no. If he has, for example, more expensive kalim, we're going to tell him, if you want to take tzedakah from the kupas tzedakah, from the community pushka, then you're going to have to sell those more expensive kalim of yours and buy cheaper ones before we start supporting you out of community tzedakah funds. But for individual people who are giving leket, shikha, and peya, and maisani, that, as the Mishnah is saying, even if he has more expensive kalim, but they're under a mashkin, then he can still take. Actually, that really belongs to the next piece. We don't force him to sell his house or his furniture or other things that he needs in order to have the 200. So that's really where you have the din. That's as far as taking leket shikcha and peya and maisoni. But if he wants to collect from the kubas tzedakah, then yes, the gaboi tzedakah will tell him that you need to sell those things and buy cheaper ones. And only then, if you still can't make ends meet, then we'll give you from the kubas tzedakah. The last Mishnah goes, Misha yeshle nun zuz vohu noisa v'noisin v'hem. If a person has 50 zuz, but he's doing business with them, hareiz alo yitzol, then also he's not allowed to take matnas on me. Because the Yerushalmi explains, 50 that you do business with and you earn money where you invest them and you earn money with them are the equivalent of 200 that you don't. 200 sitting in a bank account or something, or where you're not actually earning any, where you're not actually earning any profits from them. So 50 that you're investing and earning some profits from are equal in usefulness to that. So therefore, the same thing, then he's not able to take stuff. Continues the Mishnah, anybody who does not need to take tzedakah, but he takes anyway, he won't pass away from the world until he does end up needing to take tzedakah from people. So he was taking tzedakah under false pretenses. In the end, he's actually going to be in a situation where he truly has to take tzedakah. Marsha explains further on, following the girsa that we have in the Mishnayos, that Eina Niftim in Olam, they won't pass away from the world. The following cases in the Mishnah mention Eina Mesmin Azikni, won't pass away from old age. Here we don't even mention that, because here we have the person took tzedakah where he wasn't supposed to. He may not even live to an old age. He may just, but before he passed away, even if it's at a young age, the Eivishter will arrange that he loses his money and Taka has to truly take tzedakah. Continues the Mishnah. Vice versa, though, if a person does need to take tzedakah and he doesn't take it, he won't pass away from old age before he has the opportunity to support other people out of his own. In other words, the Eibishter will give him, where the Eibishter will give him resources and riches that eventually not only he won't need tzedakah, but he'll be able to give tzedakah and help out other people. Because he had betochen in Hashem, Baal Zeh Namar. The Mishnah continues. On this, the pasuk says, Baruch HaGevah sheyivtach b'Hashem, blessed is the person who has betochen in Hashem, v'hoya Hashem mivtacha, and Hashem is his trust. So therefore, so now, in other words, he had trust in Hashem. So Marsha explains, now earlier, a few pesukim earlier, you have, it's the Haftarah Parshas B'Chukosai, that So Yivtach Ba'odam is referring to the Uliu case of the Mishnah, where he doesn't need tzedakah, but he pretends that he does. So he's trusting in people to support him when he should have been trusting in the Eibishter. So therefore, he ends up getting what he's getting. But now you have Baruch HaGevah sheYivtach Ba'Hashem, then you have he'll grow well, Maharsha explains each part of the moshul that you have in the pasuk over there, which compares him to a leafy tree that will have deep roots and be planted by the water. Each one of those details refers to an aspect of the bracha that he'll have. He'll live long and he'll be rich and he'll be able to give tzedakah to other people. With that said, though, Mefoshim explained, this is brought in Shulchan Aruch, there's a difference between, is it that a poshut can't survive without taking tzedakah or not? If we're talking about a person who, without taking tzedakah, he's going to starve to death, and he chooses not to take tzedakah, that's not what the Mishnah is talking about over here, because then he's doing wrong by doing that. He should set aside, he should swallow his pride and take tzedakah because he needs it to live on. What we're talking about over here is a person who's having a hard time making ends meet, but he squimps and saves a little here, a little there of whatever expenses in order not to have to take tzedakah, but meanwhile, at least he and his family are healthy and so forth. That's what we're talking about over here, that he has betochen in the Eibishter, and therefore for that he deserves a schach. And the Mishnah continues, the same thing applies, the same bracha applies to a judge who judges truthfully. Din emes lamito, there are a few places where Tosfos explains, Marshal refers to it over here, that you have din emes is where you're judging according to Shulchan Aruch. Emes lamito, it means beyond that, means sometimes you may have, a dayan has Adim in front of him or something, where he realizes he has a sixth sense about it, and he realizes that these Adim are not telling the truth. Now, a dayan is done din emes, but not la mita. He might say to himself, well, it's not my problem. Listen, you know, they're making such and such claims. The bali dinim are making such and such claims. The edim are saying such and such. Halacha says in Shulchan Aruch, this is the din in that case. Not my problem whether they're lying or not. That's between them and the Eibishter. A dayan is done din emes la mita. Right. A dayan is done din emes la mita. We'll say, though, that either he'll, in such a case, he'll withdraw from it, realizing that they're lying and he can't find out the actual facts, or he'll work extra in order to find out the actual facts and expose the edim or the bali dinim or whatever for their lies. So that's din emes la mita. So a judge who does that is also included in Baruch HaGeva Sheyivtach Bashem, and he also gets that bracha. He's considered like a partner of Hashem in Ma'aseh Bereishis. And the point is also the fact that he's doing that and he's not afraid of the Bali Dinim, where after all, they might conceivably be powerful people who could take revenge on him or something. That shows that he has B'tochen in the Eibishter, therefore he gets these brachas. Continues the Mishnah. If you have a person who's not lame and not blind and not Piseach, so now on the face of it, Chigur and Piseach mean the same thing. They both mean a person who's lame. That's a story with the Alter Rebbe, but we'll tell that soon. Yeah, but right now, so Mar Shor explains that actually the word chiger can actually mean a person who stutters or a person who can't speak clearly, like Moshe kvad peh or kvad losh. And then Piseach would be a person who's lame. Anyway, so he's not any of those things. He pretends to be one of those things in order to get people's sympathy and that they should give him tzedakah. He won't die of old age before he becomes like one of those kinds of people. So in other words, Maharsha says the difference is earlier in the Mishnah, we had a person who doesn't need tzedakah at all. He's taka rich, but he pretends to be poor. He won't even have, forget about mesmin azikna, he won't live long. But and he'll have before he dies that he's going to end up having to take tzedakah. Here we're talking about a person who does need tzedakah. Here we're talking about a person who does truly need tzedakah, but he pretends like he's blind or not blind, yeah, like he's blind or lame or what have you, in order to get more tzedakah from people, to get more sympathy from people that they should give him more tzedakah.
So you said before, rich guy that he has, and he's claiming that he doesn't have.
Yeah.
But he's taking from people.
So that's what he said, yeah.
Oh, he's taking from people.
Yeah, yeah. So now we're talking about a person who truly is poor, but he's pretending that he has some kind of handicap in order that people should have more rachmanas on him and give him more stuff. Yeah. So ene mes min azikna sheheke echad mehem, he won't die of old age before he becomes like one of them. In other words, he taka will become lame or blind or what have you. Shenemet tzedek tirdof. As the pasuk says, you should pursue justice, tzedek, justice. You should pursue. So, in other words, Maharsha says the point is that even if you have to take tzedakah, you have to take tzedakah, but do it with tzedek, do it in an honest way, not pretending that you're something that you're not. And then, in other words, you should be able to run after it. But if not, if you're going to pretend that you're one of those things, then you're not going to end up being able to be tirdo, if you're not going to be able to run after it in the future, because you're going to become one of these, you're going to have one of these handicaps. Now, in that connection, I mean, you're mentioning, so there's a story involving the Alter Rebbe where one of his chassidim, where there's one time a group of his chassidim came and complained to him about one chassid was putting on a great show of being a chassid, but he's not really all that inside. So the Alter Rebbe gets a very stern look on his face and says, there should happen to him what it says at the end of the Mishnah and Pei. So they got startled, whereas the Alter Rebbe cursing him, and he explains that no, the same way as we're saying over here, a person pretends to be blind, he'll taka and end up becoming blind. The same way the guy pretends to be a chassid, eventually he'll taka become a chassid. Mishnah continues, v'chol dayan shalekeach shoychad umate esadin, any dayan who takes bribes and perverts justice, he won't die of old age before his eyes become dim, before he goes blind. The pasuk says, next week's parasha, don't take bribes, because bribery blinds the eyes of the wise people. So we mean, in other words, like this, without the Mishnah telling us, we would think it means it blinds their mental eyes, like it blinds their sense, it dulls their senses, as far as that now they can't tell who's telling truth and who's not. But now the Mishnah is telling us it means begashmius also, that they're going to end up becoming blind. They tell, I mean, well, here we have the Mishnah is telling us that. Yeah, so that's something else. He's perverting justice, and because of that, they tell in this connection of Gleich Verto with a Dayan who in his old age became deaf. So they asked him. So and they knew they he was known to be not a very honest Dayan. So they asked him, what's going on? Doesn't the Mishnah say you go blind? He says because they never actually gave me the shofar, they just jingled it in my ears. So therefore, so it's his ears that go. On the flip side of it, though, I think I mentioned before, there's a story involving a Rav in Egypt about 400 years ago named Rav Chaim Kafusi. They call him, because of this story, they call him Rav Chaim Balanes, where he was going blind in his old age. And here people started spreading rumors about him. Oh, Rav goes blind, must be Kiyashofar Yavid with him. He had in fact never taken the slightest bit of shofar. So he davened to the Eibishter to vindicate him by allowing him to see again. And taka, his eyesight came back. So that from then on, they called him Reb Chaim Balanes in tribute to that. Yeah. Masechta Dmai, the main subject of the Masechta is the concept of Dmai. We know the Gemara tells us that in the times of Yochanan Kohen Gadol, early in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, he sent around messengers around Eretz Yisrael. They found most of the Amei Oretz were giving Truma and Maisa the way they were supposed to, but there was a significant minority that were not. They were only giving Truma and not Maisa, and therefore the Chachamim came up with the whole concept of Dmai, that you buy Peiris, where you buy produce from an Amei Oretz, and you have to take Maisa Rishon and Maisa Sheni and Trumas Meiser and so forth from it Misafik, and you have the whole, most of the Masech that talks about those dinners. So now you can have a person who was an Amei Oretz, and now he wants to be, so usually the rule is you can't trust an Amei Oretz to say that his produce has been Meiser, except under certain very rare conditions. One of them being, there's a Mishnah there that says that on Shabbos you could, the Yerushalmi says, I think we're going to get to it when we get to the Yerushalmi part of Ein Yaakov, because an Amei Oretz is afraid to lie on Shabbos. But so you see what a level the Amei Oretz of those days were on. We're not Amei Oretz, and we still don't necessarily have compunctions about lying on Shabbos. Anyway, other than that, though, usually you can't trust them. So the Mishnah starts describing what happens. A person wants to be a Neman. He wants to be that from now on, we should be able to trust him on Truma and Maisa. So the Mishnah goes and describes what he needs to accept on himself. And we need to see that he's following these rules. And then once he's following them for enough time, then we can consider him a Neman. Now you buy produce from him and he tells you it's Maisa, then you can trust him. So now the Mishnah digresses, which is the Mishnah that we have over here, to talk about in a similar vein you can have. Now, an Amei Oretz is also not trustworthy as far as matters of Tumah V'Tahara. For the same reason, well, not for exactly for the same reason. In the case of Meiser, it's that they're careless about it. In the case of Tumah V'Tahara, they taka may not know the rules. So you can have now, so a person wants to become a Chover, where he'll be trustworthy on Tumah V'Tahara. Usually in Gemara terminology, a chover means a Talmud Chacham. And the Rambam brings over here that Talmud Chachamim are called chaverim because they have a true friendship between them because it's l'shem shemayim. But here the Mishnah is saying, even if you have a person who maybe is not of the caliber to be a Talmud Chacham, but he wants to be able to be trustworthy on Tumah V'Tahara. So what does he need to accept on himself in order that we can trust him on that? So the Mishnah says, I'm a Kabbalah of Lias Chavar. And there's a Gemara in Bechoras that describes more details about it. He has to, these things that the Mishnah is going to list, he has to accept on himself in front of three other Chavarim. If he's already a Tamad Chacham, then he doesn't need to. And you have all kinds of dinim that it describes in Bechoras over there of how long we have to see that he's following these things and what happens. For example, what if he was an Eved of a Tamad Chacham and then he gets sold to an Amei Oretz? You have a whole sugya about it over there. Anyway, so the Mishnah says, so what are the actual things he needs to accept on himself? So, Einem Moichel Amei Oretz Lach B'Yavish. First of all, he's not allowed to sell produce to an Amei Oretz, whether it's wet or whether it's dry. The point is, since the Amei Oretz is going to be metame, so even if it's dry, eventually the Amei Oretz is going to make it wet, and then it'll be Moichel Lekabel Truma. And if it's already been wetted before, then of course it's Moichel Lekabel Truma. The point is, the Tana of this Mishnah holds, which is a topic that's discussed in various places in Shas, the Tana of this Mishnah holds that you're not allowed to cause that Cholin in Eretz Yisrael should become Tomei. Now you could say, listen, they're Cholin, they're allowed to become Tomei, what's the problem? The Tana of our Mishnah holds, you're not allowed to make it possible for that to happen. So the Amei Oretz has his own produce that he grew or that he bought. Fine, you can't prevent that, but you can't sell him produce which is going to end up becoming Tomei as a result of him touching it. And you can't buy from him fruit that is wet, that's been moistened with one of the Shiva Mashkim, because for the same reason, because he'll have touched it and it'll become tummy. Now, to that extent, you can trust him. If he tells you that this fruit has never become wet, then fine. To that extent, you can trust him. But if it already became wet before, and ever since it was picked, and he tells you, I didn't touch it, that you can't trust him on. This is Tumah B'Tayah, that's what we're talking about as far as Chavar. That's what I'm saying. This is kind of a digression from the subject of the Mishnayos of Demai. Since the previous Mishnah, which is not here in Ein Yaakov, talks about what a person needs to accept in order to be a Neman, to be trustworthy on Trumas and Maisers, so his produce isn't Demai anymore. So now it digresses to talk about a similar thing as far as a Chavar. So he has to take on himself those things. And again, as the Gemara mentions in Bechoros, unless he's already a Talmid Chacham, he needs to accept these things in front of three Chaberim, and he needs to keep on doing them for 30 days. The Einam is Sareach Eitzel Amoritz. Also, he's not allowed to be a guest in an Amoritz's house, because then what's going to happen is the Amoritz is going to touch his clothing and make him Tomei. He also can't have an Amoritz by him as a guest if the Amoritz is wearing his own clothes. For the same reason, the clothes of the Amoritz are considered Tomei, because in particular, you have not only the Amoritz himself as Tomei Medirabanan, you also have a concern, for example, one of the things, the Amoritz, besides that they're not, in general, they're not familiar with the halachas of Tumah V'Tahara, but in particular, they're not familiar with the whole concept of Midras, the concept that if a Zav or a Zava or a Nida sits on something, then they can be Metamei it. They're not really familiar with that concept. So the Amoritz's wife, while she was a nida, may have sat at one point on a corner of his clothing and been metame it, and the Amoritz doesn't chapsich that that's a problem. So now, therefore, if he's visiting you, you who are now becoming a chaver, then you have to, when he comes, you have to give him a change of clothes that he'll change into. You can't have him be wearing his own clothes, which may be tomei midras, around your house, because then he'll end up being metame other things of yours. Rabbi Yehuda. This is why, by the way, there are some places in Shas where the Chaverim are also called Prushim. And one, in general, most of the time when the Gemara uses the word Prushim, it seems to be used as more of a derogatory term. We find, for example, Tzedukim nicknaming the Chachamim that. We find Josephus in his histories also regularly calls the Chachamim Prushim, the Yoshka and his followers, and in their writings also regularly call them Pharisees, which is the word for, which is the Greek equivalent of Prushim, because the idea behind it is a Talmid Chacham, a Chaver, Tak has to be Purush, Tak has to be separated to a certain extent socially from the Amoritz because of these rules, but the Tzedukim and the Christians and whatnot held it against the Chachamim, and therefore they called them by the derogatory term Prushim.
Means to connect.
That's what we're saying. Chavar means to connect. They thought of them as Kodesh, like you're dafka separating yourselves as though you think of yourselves as higher than us. Yeah. You have, by the way, I mean, you have, for example, Rabbi Akiva famously says that when I was an Amoritz, he says, I used to say that if I could get a hold of a Talmid Chacham, I'd bite him like a donkey, because that was an example of you had some of the Amoritz held it very, very, very badly against the Chachamim. They didn't understand the reason behind these rules, and they thought it's just the Chachamim being holier than thou. Anyway, the Mishnah continues. Rabbi Yehuda, Aflo Yigadol Behema Daka. Rabbi Yehuda says there's other things a person needs to accept in order to be a chaver. He's not allowed to raise small animals, sheep or goats, in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara mentions in a few places, particularly in Baba Kama, that the problem with those is that they go and graze in other people's fields, which is, first of all, stealing, and second of all, it destroys the ecology of Eretz Yisrael. So you can only have, if you're going to keep them, you have to pasture them in the forests and places like that. And many people are not careful with that. He can't be careless with nedarim, where you find in those times many people would make nedarim very casually, sort of like even nowadays you have, you know, people will often say I swear to God, such and such. So the same thing, you had people would say nedarim over there as a casual thing, over schoik, and in laughter, we know in Pirkei Avos it says schoik for kalos roish, magulinus adam la'erva. So a person needs to be happy, a person needs to be besimcha, but not schoik, which is silliness. He shouldn't become tummy mess unnecessarily, but Mashamish, and he should be serving the Chachamim in the Beis Medrash in order to learn Torah from them. Amrulay, the Chacham answered Rabbi Yehuda. Those are all very nice things. By all means, a person should be doing them. But loy bo elo v'chlal, these are not in the category of things that a person has to accept on himself in order to be a chaver. By all means, a chaver, he wants to take on these things. Gizunt hate, but you can't hold him to those things and tell him without those things, then you can't be a chaver. To be a chaver, they're saying is the things that the Mishnah mentioned previously, which all have to do directly with the halachas of Tumah V'Tahara. Meshamesh Beis Medrash means exactly that, to serve the Chachamim in the Beis Medrash, meaning not just to be in the Beis Medrash, to learn Torah from them, but to serve them on a personal level. You have the Gemara says the expression, Yudor the Shemusha, that he should be, your Meshamesh Beis Medrash, he should be Meshamesh Beis Medrash, because Yudor the Shemusha Shal Torah, Yosem Alimuda, serving Tumah Chachamim on a personal level is even greater than just learning from them book learning. Right, so it means if he makes it's an appropriate thing sometimes to make a neder, and it's an appropriate thing sometimes to have schoik, but to be part of it, to be free and casual with it, that Rabbi Yehuda is saying not. Yeah, he learns in front of a Talmud Chacham, yeah. But that's the thing, Meshamesh means more than just learning. Sometimes the Gemara uses Meshamesh. So sometimes the Gemara uses Shimush in the sense of learning Gemara rather than Mishnayos. In other words, that you can learn the basic halachas from a Rav, and then you learn from him the mentality, how you analyze the Mishnayos and how you understand the reasons behind them, and then derive halachas from them and so forth. Sometimes the Gemara uses Shimush to mean actually literally serving them. As for example, helping them put on or take off their shoes or carrying their clothes to the bathhouse or other kinds of menial jobs like that, where you're working for a Talmud Chacham like that, and that way you're around him. You learn Midas Tovus from him. You learn all kinds of things from him that you wouldn't learn from him if you're just sitting in front of him as a Talmud. So when they say lobo elo v'chlal, they're saying these have nothing to do with tavis. These are all very nice things. By all means, a person should take them on, but you can't say that if a person doesn't do them, he can't be a chaver. When it became a Talmud Chacham, yeah. So first, you have Rachel told him that Rachel would made the deal with him. She's going to marry him only if he goes off to learn by the Chachamim. I guess we could say that once he started learning Torah, then he started realizing already that the Chachamim have good reasons for what they're doing, including the separation from the Amei Aretz, and now there's nothing to hold it against them anymore. By the way, there's a medrash or braisa or something, I don't remember, that Rabbi Akiva tells about himself a story. He says one time he found a mes mitzvah, one time when he had just started learning by Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, he found a mes mitzvah and carried it several mil to bring it to the nearest Beis HaKavaris. And when he came back and told his Rebbeim what he had done, they told him you should know every step you took with that mes is considered as if you were shofech dam. Because the halacha is, in principle, a mes mitzvah is supposed to be kona mekoma. It's supposed to be buried where he was found, unless there's rules about it in Bava Kama and in other places about. So there are cases where you don't, and nowadays, technically don't, for various reasons, among other things that the goyim may end up desecrating the grave. But in principle, you're supposed to bury a mes mitzvah where he is. So Rabbi Akiva all of a sudden realizes, it's not just enough to have your own boich svaris about what's good, what's right, and what's not right in Yiddishkeit and Torah. You have to follow, you have to know what the Chachamim say. Sometimes it's going to be completely opposite than your das bala bias. And now he realizes I have to take a throw myself into learning. So they're right, exactly. It's chassid, right. So yeah. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Gu'ola, Yud Zayin Shvat. The pnimius, the inner content of Golos is the revelation of a new light, where as you come closer to it, as you come closer to this Ur Chodesh, then you also have a distancing of the Gilui of Alakos. Therefore, the closer we get to Mashiach, the closer we get to the end of Golos, the more intense the Golos becomes. But we realize that intense, the fact that it's becoming more and more intense is really just a preparation for that all of a sudden this Ur of the key, this Gilui Ur is going to break through. We're up to Simen Nun Dalet in Ketzer Shulchan Aruch, which is the dinim of Iker and Tofel. If you're reading two things together, where one is the most important thing and the other one is secondary. So if you have like that, one is Iker and one is Tofel, and you're only eating the Tofel because of the Iker, you wouldn't have eaten the Tofel at all if it weren't for the Iker. One example being, which comes from the Gemara, is that a person is eating herring or some kind of herring or some kind of salty or sharp thing, a radish or whatever, but because they're sharp, he eats a little bit of bread of it with it in order to take off the edge of it. Another example would be he wants to drink mashke and afterwards he eats a little bit of bread, although the Alter Rebbe says maybe that you shouldn't be doing, because after all, it's bread after a drink, that's different. Anyway, then you would only say a bracha on the ikker. You wouldn't say a bracha on the tuffel before or after, because it's nifter in the bracha on the ikker. However, the Alter Rebbe adds, midas chasidus would be to eat a little bit of the tuffel first and make a bracha on it, and then that way you don't have the question of whether it's considered an ikker or a tuffel. Also, if it was bread, you wouldn't need netilas yadayim. Now, the Rebbe says, however, you should be careful not to eat more than a kabetza of the tuffel, because if you do, then you start getting into questions of whether, in fact, you should wash them. So in this case, for example, you're eating some herring and you're eating some bread with it, the verdict would be then, ideally, you should eat a little bit of the bread first, the Alter Rebbe is saying. That way, you don't even have any suffix about the bracha. You're definitely making a hamotzi on it. If you didn't, then at least you should be eating less than a kabetza of it, because otherwise you get into questions about washing and making hamotzi on it. Okay.